What's up, sunshine? Welcome to the show. I'm Coy Wire. This is CNN 10, where I tell you the what, letting you decide what to think. Lots of stories for you today. Not a lot of time to do it, so let's get to it. We begin in California, where earlier this month, Japanese Americans marked a grim yet significant anniversary in our nation's history, 80 years since the official closing of the internment camps of World War II. After the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, President Franklin D. Roosevelt issued an executive order allowing the forced relocation of all people of Japanese ancestry. More than 60% of the captives were second-generation American-born citizens. They're labeled as security threats, despite no evidence of disloyalty. Forced to leave their homes and jobs, allowed to bring only as much as they could carry, they were put into the camps in Arizona, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Arkansas, and in Manzanar, California. CNN's Stephanie Elam spoke with survivors who were children at the time.
These Japanese Americans never considered themselves enemies of the state.
We were not enemy aliens. We were citizens. And if we were not U.S. citizens, we were people who had green cards. We were incarcerated. We were in prison. And we were in concentration camps.
Most of those camps, which were surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards and towers, were officially closed 80 years ago this month.
In December 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. 2 months later, U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt ordered the forced removal and incarceration of Japanese Americans. They were taken to camps like this one. This is Manzanar, out in the vast high desert of California's Eastern Sierra, and held till nearly the end of 1945, after the end of World War II.
Los Angeles native Joyce Nakamura Okazaki was just 7 years old when her family was forced to board a train to Manzanar in April 1942.
When the prisoners arrived here in Manzanar, they had to give up almost all of their property, save two suitcases, as well as their privacy.
Racial discrimination, war hysteria, and then poor administration. Those three things, very important for why we were put into camp.
Born and raised in Los Angeles, June Aiochi Burke was 10 when her family of five was forced to leave their home on May 7th, 1942.
We had a three-bedroom house, everything furnished. We had to leave everything behind. We lost everything.
For 5 months, they and others were held in horse stalls at Santa Anita Racetrack, east of Los Angeles, managing to remain patriotic, even those who weren't born in the States.
I don't think we felt anything else but American under armed guards and barbed wire, but we're celebrating the 4th of July.
From there, Aiochi Burke's family was moved to a camp in Arkansas.
The barracks were all black, tar paper, the ground was all brown, and the sky was all gray.
Yet she says she felt safe, and everyone was able to move freely about the camp, with many parents shielding their children from their harsh reality. As the prisoners were released years later, they were given $25, about $450 in today's money, and a train ticket, the caveat being that they could not initially return to the West Coast. There was no formal apology or reparations until 1988.
It's important to remember your history so that it is not repeated again.
Pop quiz, hot shot. In many cultures, what food is eaten at midnight to bring good luck for the new year? Popcorn, grapes, chocolate, or nuts? If you said grapes, you are divine. It is a Spanish and Latin American tradition to eat one grape for each of the 12 clock chimes at midnight. Each grape represents good luck for 1 month of the coming year. A new crystal ball will be dropped in New York City's Times Square this year to ring in 2026. The ball has almost 5,300 scintillating Waterford crystals, nearly twice as many as the last one. It also has circular crystals for the first time. This is only the ninth time the ball has been updated since the tradition began in 1907. What does your body language say about you? Without saying anything at all, how you carry yourself can send a message to those around you. Well, new pioneering research could soon change how some of the top athletes are coached and how they're assessed by potential recruiters or scouts, all because of their body language. Our Don Riddell spoke to a professor who's analyzing the body language of some of the world's best soccer players during practices and games, and what he's discovering might make all of us consider the messages we are sending with the way we carry ourselves.
Football players cost a fortune. Every year they're bought and sold with the hope that their skills will improve the chances of the billion-dollar teams who want them. But are they being accurately evaluated, and how do the teams who buy them know that they're getting true value for money? One pioneering researcher thinks he has an answer.
Right now, it is ridiculous. There's no data on psychology. Of course, they have scouts and they spend a lot of time looking at these players, but there's no objective data on their psychology.
Gaia Jordet believes that psychology is an undervalued commodity in football. He's a professor in psychology and sport at the Norwegian School of Sport Sciences in Oslo. Many professional teams have used his expertise, and now he's figured out a way to study every player's body language in the English Premier League and the Women's Super League.
We were able to produce something like 5,000 behaviors in one game that says something about these players' psychology. The ones who actually have the most body language in these games are women. So they have more expressions during games than men. But what you might not know, the majority of these expressions are actually of strategic nature. So it's tactical instructions. When it comes to the emotional part of this, the men in our study are actually more emotional than the women. Movements, actions, body language, things that these players are doing during a game that will reveal something, leave clues about their motivation, their emotionalities, their social orientation. There are examples of players who tend to be just too disappointed in their teammates when they made mistakes, but also in themselves when they made mistakes. And they would walk around on the pitch and just having a very destructive body language that would drain the other players of energy.
Jordet and his team have been using artificial intelligence to speed up their research, which he believes will soon be available so quickly that a coach will ultimately be able to use the data in real time in a half-time team talk. And, in theory, the research could be used to evaluate a player's compatibility with potential new teammates.
These types of analyses can have a pretty powerful, I think, impact on recruitment and scouting. They know everything about their physiological, physical output. They know everything about their technical performance, the tactical performance. But when it comes to psychology, as of today, even at the highest level, it's still a gut feel. It's still a subjective assessment whether this player is psychologically ready for our team or not.
Today's story getting a 10 out of 10, a new record holder for the world's oldest bus driver. Raymond Hager from Wichita Falls, Texas, is 95 years old and not slowing down one bit. Well, maybe for traffic lights and stop signs he is. He's been driving a city bus for 27 years after retiring from his first career as a farmer.
Just don't get tired of driving. I can't hear why, but I get more tired at home than I do driving. Honestly, you know. If I get 4 or 5 hours sleep a night, then I'm ready to go.
Ready to go, and now getting the credit he deserves. An official recognition from the Guinness Book of World Records. And, maybe even more special, the city just surprised him with an official Raymond Hager Day on the Wichita Falls calendar in recognition of his years of service.
It's kind of like a dream right for me right now. You know, like yesterday, my grandson for dad, he said, "Well, Papa, are you still on cloud nine?" I said, "Kyle, it's like I had a good dream. You know, it's hard for me to soak in yet."
Rise up, Paul, and rise up to all of you. Thank you for subscribing and commenting on our YouTube channel for your shout-out requests. This first shout-out goes to Miss Han and friends at MAPS in Mount Arlington, New Jersey. They made this shirt. They sent this card. And let me just say that we love you, too. Go out, spread some joy and kindness. I'm Coy Wire, and we are CNN 10.